This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
9:28 on this Tuesday, January 6th, joined by our friend Dr. Judy Ho, a clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Happy New Year, Dr. Judy Ho.
Happy New Year, Tommy. How's your New Year been so far?
So far, pretty good, but you know, it's still early. We got a long way to go. 360. I'm messing up here. 359. Whatever it is. Today's King's Day here. You spent some time in New Orleans. You know what that is, right?
But you know what? I don't.
That's when King Cake season begins.
King's Day.
King Cake season begins. Oh. I know you remember King Cakes, right?
King Cake. Well, I do remember King Cakes. That's really cool that you guys have a whole season for it. How did I miss this?
Well, come on back down and we'll reorient you. Let's talk about, because we talk about mental health here. We're very concerned about that. That's why you're on every other Tuesday. Let's talk about signs of depression as opposed to the post-holiday letdown. I was kidding around on Sunday afternoon texting some people saying, well, now I'm ready for the holidays, unfortunately. Is it normal for people to have a letdown after the holidays?
Oh, totally. I feel like first of all, it's so funny because I just made a reel about this on Instagram yesterday about like what we think depression is and what it actually is and how it doesn't always look that way where people just are sad. You know, it can look like a lot of other things. And I think that sometimes, especially around this time in the new year, there's a little bit of that, oh man, the holiday season's passed me by and now I got to wait a whole year for it. Or maybe you were expecting something huge to happen during the holiday and it kind of feels like a letdown because it just wasn't your expectations. You're going to feel that way for a little bit. I think that that's pretty normal. That's not depression if it's just a few days. And, you know, if you find yourself looking forward to things, still having joy, you know, in certain moments, then it's not depression. But depression is more something that kind of sticks with you. It's not just seasonal, but it's just not always sadness either. You know, sometimes it's just irritability and being snappy, especially with the people closest to you. Other times it's just, you know, the things that you used to love doing. It's not that you don't like them at all anymore. It's just, it's not getting you that same kick that it used to. Or it's not being able to focus and concentrate and really move forward with your goals. People sometimes think, oh, maybe that's because I have ADHD. Maybe, but it could also just be a telltale symptom of depression.
You know, as you say that, I'm thinking if you get to the holidays being a diversion and I got to wait a whole year for them to come around again, if you go to substance abuse, it's all about really escaping reality or the humdrum everyday existence, right? That's what it seems to me is what we're talking about here, ultimately.
Exactly. I mean, I think that all of us need a little bit of escapism. Sure, that makes sense. You know, when you're an adult, you've got lots of responsibilities, so you're looking forward to the weekend, you're looking forward to that next getaway. That's all normal. But when you're leaning way too much into avoidance or escapist coping, where, for example, you're just playing video games for 8 hours a day, almost every day, or you find yourself just kind of laying on a couch whenever you have a free time just to try to sleep your day away. That's something that also people don't talk about that much, that sometimes that's what depression can look like. That's what escaping life can look like, where you're just basically like, well, if I just go to sleep and just lay here, then I don't have to deal with any of my problems. Then, of course, alcohol and substances are a big part of that escapism too, because again, you alter your reality for a specific moment in time. And when people don't love their reality, they're going to go to that more and more as a coping.
So when it comes to, and I hate to use the word normal, to love every moment of every day, something's wrong with you, brah. Because that's not normal, is it? I mean, and it goes to escapism, Dr. Judy. No, you understand what I'm saying? Because it seems like that's not the way we're wired, is it?
No, I think that's why people expect that you're supposed to feel that way. And I think reality TV, social media, it can make us feel like that's how some people live. And we've talked about this before, Tommy, but, you know, most people share their highlight reels, right? Mm-hmm. They're sharing the great things about what's happening in their life. And even when they appear to have a raw, real moment with you, you have to remember they're still putting that out there for the public to consume, right? So even their quote-unquote raw moments, I mean, how real is what they're sharing? I think it depends on person to person, but most of the times it's still curated, right? So let's say somebody that you look up to shares that they are struggling with depression or anxiety, and you're thinking, okay, that's great, but mine is way worse than that. Well, you have to remember that they still put this piece out there, even if they're trying to be vulnerable and trying to be real, that's still curated. Mm-hmm. So it may not be what they're thinking moment to moment when they're really in the throes of their mental illness or their struggles or their grief or whatever it is that they might be dealing with. And so I think these unrealistic expectations actually cause us to be at more risk for true clinical depression and anxiety, because you're like, well, why doesn't my brain work that way? Why don't I feel that way about life? And life is full of ups and downs. Even the happiest person who is not clinically depressed, if you don't have ups and downs, you're lying. Right. You can be going through a great season in your life, but something will happen. That, you know, somebody will annoy you, somebody will upset you.
That's what I meant earlier when I said, come on, brah, something's not real here, because not everybody is happy all the time. It's just not the way life works.
No.
So along those lines, you have to kind of manage your expectations going into it. I mean, look, when you're a baby, you don't go into life and they don't sit you down and say, okay, little Judy, here we go. When you go and explain the way life's going to be to you. But at some point, you do have to sit down and have a conversation with yourself about managing your expectations and what can you reasonably expect out of life. Do you not?
Absolutely. And I think that, again, you know, living a good life, a valued life, a life that you're proud of, that's not going to feel great all the time. Because when you're living true to yourself and you're saying, well, I'm not going to sweep things under the rug and I actually am here to get better as a human being and have good relationships, you're going to have conflict. You're going to have troubles. If you're reaching for a goal, you're going to have struggles. You're going to have self-doubt, right? Overcoming any kind of adversity requires you to be willing to experience at least some negative emotion on the way there. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you want your life to be meaningful and to look back and say, I'm so glad that I did that, even if I didn't make it, or even if it looked like a failure, or even if I made mistakes, you're not going to be happy all the time. And unfortunately, I think that that's what people are selling these days, whether it's, you know, certain types of celebrities, influencers, life coaches are like, oh, like, things should be positive all the time. You should always be living your dream life. You should love every moment of your job. How can someone love every single moment of their job? It's called a job for a reason, right? But I think that these people, while they might be well-meaning, are putting a message out there that actually causes people to feel really inferior about themselves. And that is, I think, my problem with overly positive mantras and what we call now toxic positivity, right? Because when someone's like, just cheer up, be happy, that ironically makes you feel even worse about yourself and your life.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up with toxic positivity when we come back. We're talking to Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Somebody texted in, and this is interesting, talking about escapism. My significant other had an affair, but I don't think it was about love or sex. I think it was about escapism because they hated their job. You can delve into that, Dr. Judy Ho. When we come back, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, 9:36, 24 till 10, traffic now, WWL. It is 9:42, 18 till 10. We're talking to Dr. Judy Ho, our friend, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, and we're talking about toxic positivity. A little bit more on that, Dr. Judy, before we get to the text.
Yeah, I think that toxic positivity is something that's affected a lot of people because they're actually trying to feel better, get better, recover from depression, stop being a negative person. But this idea of toxic positivity means that no matter what the circumstances, no matter what moment of the day, you're telling yourself you're supposed to just be happy and not have any negative emotions. And if you do, that's bad. And we've already talked about, you know, how generally living life, you're not going to be positive all the time. But also, remember, your negative emotions are functional. They're telling you a story. They're telling you something to pay attention to. It's a survival mechanism. So you wouldn't want to dull that, right? You want to be able to tap into your emotions, and it doesn't mean that it feels comfortable in the moment, but those negative emotions are telling you something, and there's something to be learned from them.
I'm going to tattle on myself here. As a younger person, I can remember telling somebody who was feeling down, what are you down about? You got two legs, you got two arms, you can walk, you can talk, you can see, you got all of this going for you. When in fact, that is of little comfort, and that was the worst thing I could have said. Accurate?
I don't know if it's the worst thing, but I appreciate you sharing that. I mean, I think that I feel like you're not the only one, though. So mm-hmm. It's good that you shared that, because that would not be the only reaction that Tommy has. It's what everybody does from moment to moment, mm-hmm. I think.
So a more appropriate response would have been, well, what is it that's got you sad? What is it that's got you down, maybe?
Yeah, like maybe be more curious about it. And I know that that's not going to be doable every single time. That's why the 80-20 rule applies, you know. Mm-hmm. I still beat myself up all the time when I make a mistake, do something wrong. I can be very mean to myself in my head. And sometimes it's just like, okay, you know what? Without all of that, let's just like remove all of that. You know, what is there anything to be learned here? Can you just sit with this and know that this mm-hmm. is temporary and it's not going to last forever? I think that's important for all of us to try to do. Maybe 80% of the time would be a more realistic goal than having to do that 100% of the time.
So let's talk about the text that came in, which is basically, and it's long and disjuncted as some of these texts can be, because people text in just to let the audience know, and then other people text in, so your text gets interrupted by somebody else's text, then I got to go back and piece all of this together. But bottom line, basically, they're saying that somebody was involved in an affair, but they didn't think the affair had anything to do with sex or love or passion. It was because mm-hmm. the other person was so miserable in their job, they were looking for an outlet and they were looking for any diversion. Is there any case to be made for that or not?
Well, that could be one part of why they had an affair. It's fine if you want to find a reason. But unless you guys are completely cool with having an open relationship and that was agreed upon beforehand, they still violated your trust and violated a covenant or an agreement that you made when you got into this relationship. So explaining it is one thing. And then the other thing is, you know, well, are you okay with this violation? And if you're not, can this be recoverable, right? Do you want to save this relationship? But if you want to save this relationship, the person who was cheated on, they have to be honest with themselves and with the other person in terms of how this felt, what they wanted, right? It could be one reason you can say, well, someone's having a midlife crisis or someone's going through something. They're dealing with a lot of grief, a lot of stress, and that's why they cheated. I'm not sure if that's a valid reason to explain away the entire behavior, because it was a very deliberate act, right, mm-hmm. That they still did. So you need to have this conversation, and the next time they're struggling with something, whatever it is, whether it's stress at work or something else, are you going to fear that they're going to do it again, you know? And is there any recourse? So I think while important to try to figure out what some of the underlying reasons are, you also do sometimes have to focus on the behavior and what it means for your relationship.
Yeah, not to lighten up this or anything, but, you know, you'd hate to come home and find somebody else there. You had another bad day at work, huh, honey? So when it comes to fixing that trust, somebody else texted in, once that trust has been violated and you have been cheated upon, can it be rectified?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Can it be fixed? Can you repair that relationship?
I think it's possible for some relationships and for some people. Every situation is different, and you can't judge one relationship for another. So sometimes people will say, well, if I ever found myself in that situation, I'd get out right away. Well, maybe, you know, but when you're actually in a situation, there's a lot to think about. There's the practicalities, there's the family that you've built together, there's the relationship that you've had for years and years without major problems, or so you thought, right? So I think that the first step is true communication, really being 100% brutally honest with one another about what it is that you need and why this happened, and whether or not both people are really committed to making this relationship work in the future. So if you are the person who was cheated on, you cannot hold this betrayal, this affair over their head for the rest of your lives, right? So are you the bigger person enough so that you can actually not forget, but truly forgive and not keep bringing it up in future arguments, you know, or somehow think that this means that you have a free-for-all and you get to go cheat too and that they shouldn't be mad about it. I mean, you really have to know whether or not you're that kind of person who can let this go truly and try to have essentially a do-over. You do have to have a sense of a do-over. You can't just be tracking where they're going all the time, putting tabs on them, calling them every time they don't call you every 30 minutes. You know, that's not going to make a relationship work. So if you can't reestablish the trust and you can't even do it, even if you invite a professional to help you, go to couples counseling, you know, pray, whatever it is that you need to do, sometimes it is better to separate and to just have a think on it before you make a final decision about the relationship.
I would think, and I'm no Dr. Judy Ho, but I would think the first step is you got to go back and you got to do some undigging, excavating, if you will, and figure out what was it that led to the infidelity to begin with, right, before you can address it?
Yeah, that's a great point. And Tommy, I think that this is also where people are not honest, right? They're not being honest with one another. They're saying, I really do care about you. I do love you. But at the same time, I'm not really willing to tell you the truth about why I did what I did. You know, maybe I'm trying to protect you. Maybe I'm trying to take care of something in some specific way in my mind. And I'm being selfish. I'm not really thinking about the longevity of this relationship. So I think you want to be careful when you have that conversation. It doesn't slip into just excuse making. Like, well, I did this because this, and you weren't paying attention to me. You know, those are excuses. Those are not really the reasons why you cheated.
So apparently the text line is going crazy here. I don't know if it's been a cheating holiday season or whatever's going on here, but I'm getting a lot of texts about this. Somebody wants to know if the other person is not going to let it go, then you need to separate, because if, as you said, Dr. Judy, you can always be bringing it up or holding it over the other person's head. That's not a situation that's sustainable, is it?
No, it's really not. And I think that, again, you have to expect some of that. If you're the person who was a cheater, you have to expect that there were, going to be some feelings, at least in the beginning. So you're going to have to let them get out their aggressions, their passive aggressiveness. They're going to make comments. But, you know, after the first, I would say, a couple months, a few months, that should no longer be the color of all of your arguments. And if it is, maybe you guys need to take a break and think about whether or not you can really start over and trust a person again, because it's too hard to live with all of that resentment. And if you don't truly trust the person, then you really have nothing in that partnership.
And another text comes in and says they think their former partner was basically incapable of fidelity or monogamy. So are some people wired that way, or does that indicate and I know this is general, you don't know the people involved here, Dr. Judy, but are some people wired that way, or does that indicate a deeper problem? Does monogamy go against the human nature, or do we know this?
I mean, I think that for a lot of people who say that, you know, they're just not wired for monogamy, there could be some biological inclinations for why you say that or why you think that is. And you can make all the arguments that you want. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, monogamy is a choice, right? It is a choice, because we have free will and we have a brain that we can think with, and, you know, we direct our actions. And you can say that monogamy is not for you. If it's not, then don't be in a monogamous relationship. You know, go be in an open relationship or don't be in any relationship. It's not fair for you to get into a committed monogamous relationship and then say you're not built for monogamy, right? So that's your choice, right? So I'm not going to make any comments on people's ideas and lifestyle choices about what partnership means, but it's more about, you know, that's also not an excuse, right? Once you decide to get into a monogamous relationship, then nobody's built for it in the long run in the same way. Like relationships, as if they last long enough, are going to have conflict. There's going to be times when you don't feel like you're in love with the person. Maybe you feel more like you're a roommate with them. Those are all not good excuses to all of a sudden say, well, monogamy is not for me. And living with anybody for long periods of time and being in committed relationships with anybody is a choice, and a hard choice that you make every single day, no matter whether or not you think that you're built for monogamy or not. So I think that, you know, we have to really just think about what it really means when you say that you want to be in a relationship and a committed one, and know, again, like we were talking about before, toxic positivity. You're going to be in love with that person every single moment of every day? No, you're not going to be.
No, you got to respect them, though, huh? Dr. Judy, thank you so much. I appreciate your time and your insight, as always. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks, or, as it equates, about 20 king cakes from now. Back in a flash, we'll find out what Newell's got planned for us on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.